Happy Tag Tuesday.
How are you?
I'm really good. I'm Ann Police.
And I'm Denise Cooper.
We are Two Average Girls. We're glad you're joining us. We have been sitting here talking for about an hour and, about all kinds of life things. And then we talked for quite a while about how we're going to start this podcast. And we both sort of looked at each other blankly. I don't know. How are we going to start the podcast? What's our banter today?
We just bantered about banter about banter. And now yep. We're on mic. And well, you know, it's a very weird day for us here. It's got thunder and lightning. So if you hear dogs barking yeah. in the background, my gun dogs don't tend to like the loud noise, which is a little odd.
They were upset.
They were very upset. We never get thunder and lightning. It's barely raining, but it's a lot of noise in the sky. I think it's God saying, California, stop being stupid.
Oh, you think
it's an anti-tax
situation?
I think God is saying the gas here costs too much money. Would you please stop? People can't drive. People are trying to figure out if they're going to buy food for their family or they're going to drive, and it's a hard decision.
You can't do both in California.
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
No, I had a great weekend. How was your weekend?
I'm trying to think. How was my weekend? It was pretty chill. I think we just kind of chilled it out a little bit, and we didn't do anything exciting. I think we watched some good TV shows and we had some good food. We didn't do anything exciting.
This last week, it wasn't the weekend because that would be the finals. I was able to go. Some mm-hmm. friends invited us to go to the tennis tournament out in the desert in La Quinta, mm-hmm. actually out in Indian Wells. It's actually known as Tennis Paradise.
Oh.
If you didn't know that.
I did not know.
So it's not just a regular tennis tournament, it's Tennis Paradise.
Okay.
It's
why?
Because it is like really nice.
The weather?
Really beautiful. The weather's great, usually. I mean, the weather compared to everywhere else during this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
If you go anywhere else in the world, except for probably Miami, which is where they're going next, it's kind of not nice. It gets really, really hot in mm-hmm. different places because it's winter mm-hmm. in some places around mm-hmm. the world. And here, you know, it's moderate. It's like 70 something with chance of scattered showers or whatever. But I was able to go to this tennis tournament. And I just have to say, there's just something about watching live sports that is just so exciting. I don't mean watching live sports from the nosebleed. Okay.
Yeah.
We got tickets and we were second and third row.
I saw photos
of the main stadium seating.
You were right there.
I mean, I could have literally grabbed a tennis player if I felt like it.
Mm.
I could make eye contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
I could say words to them and they would have heard me.
Did you?
No.
Okay, good.
No.
Don't do it.
There's a few that are very particular.
Yeah.
And they're kind of diva-ish.
Sure.
And I'm not talking about the women.
No, we're talking about the men.
I'm talking about
yeah,
the men.
Yeah.
And it's such a mental thing out there.
Mm.
But I just have to say that, you know, I was sitting around a lot of people who are tennis players, because usually when you go there, you're a player, right? You're like, you go there because that's your love and your sport. It's not my sport. No. I've played tennis in the past. I used to play at the club up the street for a little while my kids were going to school. I used to dabble in it with the other women. But it wasn't my thing. Like, it wasn't my social situation, and that's kind of what a lot of women tend to have going on. So it wasn't ever my thing. But I talked to a lot of people and they're like, oh, so you're here just watching. I'm like, you cannot do anything but appreciate the skill level at that level.
Yeah.
Every time I get done watching it, and we watch a lot of tennis on television because it's either tennis or golf is on TV for us, I want to play.
Sure.
And it looks so easy.
I don't mean to crush Denise's dreams, but it might not be
well,
easy.
I already know it's not, because okay. when I was at your house last year and I tried to play, but I had a bad elbow.
That's true.
I had this tennis elbow situation going on,
that's
which
true.
I don't even play tennis, but I think it was from golf. But whatever the reason was, I tried to play And I realized it's not that easy.
It's not easy.
They make it look real easy.
Well, what are those guys serving at approximately? Do you know?
About 135 is a good serve. Mm. They go up to 140, and there has been 150 serving. No Mm-mm. problem. Mm-mm. I mean, it's next level. Mm. It's literally the amount of topspin and just the speed at which they can get to a ball across the court.
Sure.
And the amount of time and effort. I mean, some of these matches go on for a long time.
Yeah.
You're playing for 3-4 hours.
Yeah.
It's really crazy and really beautiful. And to see these athletes that mm-hmm. close and playing at that level was just such a treat.
So fun.
It was so much fun. So thank you, Beth, for inviting us.
Beth,
it was so great. She's and her husband.
The best.
But it was just so great to go. And it was outside and it just felt good to be there.
That's nice.
In the sun, just soaking it up when most of the country is still cold.
I know. We complain a lot about California and our inability to elect a decent governor and mayors, et cetera, and the taxes and all, and the homeless. And I mean, it goes on and on and on. Traffic. We can go on for days. But at the same time, it's like, there's just no place better. It's so amazing.
I mean, that's the problem, is that you have to take the good with the bad.
And the bad is so bad.
And the bad can be really overwhelmingly bad. It really goes to when we've talked to Todd Blumstein on our show about, it really comes down to the president isn't that important, but your elected officials locally tend to really influence your life.
A lot.
For good or bad.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot.
So really make it happen when it comes to elections. And we just had one. So we'll see how things go this next year. But I just thought I had a great week being out in the desert, watching these great athletes. And it makes me motivated to want to get in shape and start playing some tennis. I told you, tell your husband.
Yes. Denise wants to take tennis lessons from my husband, which is hilarious. And I told him, and he's like, why does she think I can teach her how to play tennis?
Because he plays tennis.
He's a really good tennis player.
And a pickleball player.
He's a really good pickleball player.
Why can't he teach me?
I think he can.
Why does he think he can't?
I think he was surprised.
You think I'm too lame?
No. That's not it at all. I think he was surprised to be asked.
Oh.
That's all. Oh. It's not a matter of...
I think he could do it.
Oh, he could absolutely do it. We've had some folks come over who haven't played pickleball ever and are like, hey, can you teach us how to play pickleball? And he's really good about just like trying, you know, being like, here, do that, you know, whatever, doing the basics of pickleball. And these, I mean, lame.
Lame people?
Real lame.
Lamer than me?
Oh, my gosh. You look like Martina Navratilova of the pickleball court compared to some of the people. We've had a few that I've just gone, oh, honey.
It's not going to work.
You can't. Anyway, let's go eat.
That's why, like, sometimes you'll take people out, or you'll be out with people playing golf, and you're just like, oh, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
There's no amount of practice or lessons that's going to make this happen.
You can tell almost immediately, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can tell pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's next level, but I'm feeling pretty good. They motivated me. Every time I watch it, I'm like, okay, I can do this.
Here's two experts talking about tennis. I mean,
you have to aim it.
You have to aim it. That's what we're calling the show. You have to aim it.
Oh my gosh, we are so lame.
I love it. So today we're doing something that's a little, not a departure. It's a new segment that we're adding to our lineup. We have weird news. We have true crime. We have interviews. And now we're doing, we haven't named it yet, but essentially we're going to do a segment on current affairs.
Yeah. I listen to talk radio every morning on my drive to work.
Who's your talk radio favorite?
I listen to KFI.
KFI, AM 690.
AM 690. Mm-hmm. And they are, I listen to their podcast because I don't like to listen to commercials.
Right.
So it's usually a day behind, which is fine. Yeah. But they get to the nitty gritty. And depending on the hosts, you will get their opinion.
Sure.
Or not even opinion. They'll just have a conversation about it. And you can kind of decide what you think, or you can go home and look up more information about it or whatever. And that's kind of what I envision us doing. That
we're like the John and Ken of podcasting,
or the Gary and Shannon.
Oh, are they morning podcasts?
They're mid-morning.
Okay. I'm so not up on it. I haven't listened to KFI for so long. Ever since they didn't hire me, I was like, well, then I guess I'm done.
They didn't hire you?
It's a long story. There's a lot of emotional baggage with it. We'll talk about it later.
I wish they would have. I would listen to you.
I would listen to me too.
That's no, really,
I didn't have enough. I didn't have enough experience. I was straight out of college. I was like, you should hire me. They're like, seriously? This is Los Angeles. Back of the bus, Rosa Parks. You want to start or do you want me to start?
I'll start if you don't mind.
Go for it.
One of the things that is, there's a lot of conversation about this, and you and I have shied away from anything to do with school shootings.
No, please.
Because we don't want to, when we talk about true crime, there's a plethora of true crime out there. And you and I are very selective on what we want to talk about because a lot of it is emotionally too much for us. Mm-hmm. It has to do with children,
right,
or some kind of, you know, really satanic anything or something to do with school shootings. I don't want to report it because, mm-mm, number one, I don't want to give much more attention to these crazy people that, right, are doing these things.
Amen.
Right.
Mm.
But the reality of it is for all of us that we are in a world now where these kind of things are happening over and over and over again. And I just listened to a segment on this last week where they were talking about the school boards are going to have to start monitoring what they do. And this is on a federal level, I believe, on how they're going to do their on-campus shooting practices. I don't know,
like
how
drills,
like the drills, okay, you know, like it's stop, drop and roll,
yes,
or, you know, under the desk for the earthquake. Now they have active shooter
drills,
things that they're doing, mm-hmm, and there's no guidelines. So there's, mm-hmm, schools all over the country that are going above and beyond what should be happening. For, mm-hmm, example, they had a girl on there talking about how they had this very simulated real type of thing. They didn't tell the kids it was a drill.
No.
They went on lockdown. They heard gunshots.
No.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It gets worse. They had literally showed, they had private schools are doing stuff where they're showing people dropping to the ground with, mm-hmm, real blood, like fake, mm-hmm, blood coming out.
Oh my gosh.
So there needs to be some sort of, I mean, what is going to happen to these young kids who are now going to school worried about this? Mm-hmm. And then they have a drill that ends up, they don't know it's a drill, but then it's a drill. The psychological damage, mm-mm, to me that's happening, mm-mm, is just so crazy, which is what led me to start talking about this subject. This has to do with the school shooting that happened last year by Ethan Crumbly. He is a 15-year-old boy who shot 4 Michigan students and injured, I think, 6 more.
Okay.
But 4 died. And I don't really want to get into
him
too much,
nope,
but we have to get into him enough to talk about the story that I want to talk about, which, mm-hmm, is just recently his mother had already been convicted, but his father had been convicted of manslaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What do you think about that?
I couldn't support it more. I don't know that it's an answer. It's not a problem solver in a, how do I say this? It's not going to solve the problem. If you've got a kid that's kind of out there, then you've got a kid that's kind of out there. There's not a lot you can do sometimes. But in this case, they were able to prove some things that I think set a precedence for maybe some other parents who are like, uh-oh. Right?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So in February of 2024, this year, a jury found Jennifer Crumbly, the mother,
mm-hmm,
of Michigan school shooter Ethan, guilty of involuntary manslaughter in connection with the shooting deaths of those students in 2021.
Oh, it was 2021?
It was in 2021.
I didn't realize that long ago. Okay.
Crumbly was found guilty of 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter. This is a rare case that the parents are being charged in connection with it. One of the main reasons that they're doing this is because the circumstances around this boy's ability to shoot up this school are so egregious,
mm,
and so ridiculous. So the day of the shooting, well, first of all, let's go back to his childhood. It sounds like the parents were both extremely, the parenting skills were not there.
Okay.
He was left alone a lot because they both worked.
Okay.
Again, don't know the financial situation. They had to work.
Right.
So he's left alone.
Yeah.
He's left to his own devices on social media,
mm,
on games.
Mm.
He is somewhat obsessed with violence.
Okay.
Okay. They know he's troubled. He has a journal at home. In the journal, he's writing things about, I want it to stop. I don't like my life. Mm. He's talking about killings. It's pretty violent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The day of the shooting, he that morning, he's in class and he starts drawing pictures that the teacher sees, and they are so graphic and so disturbing that he reports him to the office, and he goes up there and the parents get called.
Okay.
Parents come in and they are in the office, and the counselor is like, "We're worried about him. This doesn't seem right. Mm-hmm. We think he should go home, and we think we need to deal with this like at a different time."
Yeah.
Parents say, "No, he should be fine. We have to work. He can't come home."
How old? 17?
He's 15.
He's 15. Okay.
He's 15 at the time. So at the time, this is their response. "No, he should be good." They leave him there. Guess what?
Does anyone search a bag or a locker?
They did not. Again, there are so many red flags here, and there's so many reasons that, and again, a Second Amendment purist would have a disagreement with this probably, but to me, there should be accountability for mental illness, for age, and for all the things that make us have the right to have these guns in the first place. You have to be responsible.
Oh, well, a 15-year-old doesn't have a right to that. So
you can't even get a driver's license and get behind a car. Mm-hmm. But the kid was given this SIG, 9mm, 6 hour, 9mm, as a gift from his parents.
When was that?
A few months before.
Okay.
Okay.
A little Christmas gift of some sort or something?
They knew he was struggling, and that was their way of helping him out.
Yeah, I'm becoming more and more convinced that their manslaughter conviction is correct. Go on.
The parents told the school they could not take him home because they both had to return to work, and that if he left school, he would walk home and be alone. School officials were worried about his mental health, did not think it was a good idea for him to be home alone since they were concerned he was considering suicide.
Okay.
That's how far they thought he would.
Okay.
She said, this is what they said. Jennifer Crumbly and her attorney, Shannon Smith, argued that the school had been nonchalant during the meeting and did not insist he be taken home. Now, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever gotten called up to the office for your kid for any reason?
Mm-hmm. Couple
I did
times.
Too.
Yep. Couple times.
I did too in high school.
Never in high school.
I did in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what happened.
Tell me what happened.
It's like The Exorcist hit me. My head started spinning.
Uh-huh.
I lost all control.
Mm-hmm.
I got up into the office and I said, "Where's my kid? He's going home right now."
You're mad at the school or at the kid?
At the kid.
Okay.
It's not the school's fault.
Okay.
The school doesn't need to deal with it.
No, they don't.
I'm going to deal with it.
Well, guess what? You're the parent.
That's what I'm saying.
That's your job.
My whole deal is that when I heard that they did not take him home, I thought, what in the world could be worse than why would you not take him home? And if you think your kid's suicidal or you don't think he's suicidal, I mean, every single thing that happened in this case could have been prevented.
Let me ask you this. Did the school then send him back to class, or did they keep him there in the office with the psychiatrist? Back into the classroom.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. During the trial, the CEO of the company where Jennifer Crumbly worked testified that she could have left work if she needed to take care of her son, is what he said. Or she could have brought him back with her to her office.
Yeah. I've done that.
I mean, that's what he says now. I'm not defending her.
No. Nope.
Because to me, you lose your job in defense of your own child.
Well, that's what I would think.
Here's the thing. I don't believe that these parents were accountable for their child. And I think this is why, this is the whole precedent of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to make sure that parents are accountable for what their kids do.
Yeah.
Your kid gets behind a moving vehicle and drives drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And you were giving them the alcohol, or you knew that they were drinking and you didn't take their keys away from them. To me, that would be manslaughter.
Well, it is.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And here we are. This was, in text messages she sent after the shooting, Jennifer Crumbly told a man she was having an affair with.
Hmm.
So this got brought up.
Wait,
too.
Wait, she's not still married to the dad, is she? Oh, they were still married?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
That the shooting could have been prevented and that the school should not have allowed him to return to class. So she's blaming it on the school.
And that's what people like that do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The parents purchased him the gun he used in the shooting as a gift and had taken him to shooting range before the attack. Prosecutors argued that the parents did not secure the gun or limit the son's access to it, which is exactly what they didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about a parent buying a kid a gun?
On some level, I can see how they're like, he's really into it. They're in denial anyway. There's more red flags in this house than anyone can even count, and they're not seeing any of them. So, okay. The fact that they're kind of idiots, I can see how they would get to the point where they'd be like, he really is into guns. Let's get him a gun, and he can target practice. He can learn to use it appropriately. He can have the appropriate respect for a gun. That, in a normal situation, is an answer to, not a problem, but is an answer to your kid who is digging this kind of stuff. This has taken it to another level. He was a child with very, very deep mental and emotional issues that the parents were not in any way looking at as a reality. The parents, I have a feeling, are also not well.
Yeah, I mean, she's had multiple affairs. Again, this is not a character assassination on a mom.
No, but let me point this out. If you're willing to cross a line, you're willing to cross a line.
But in her defense,
yeah,
having an affair is different than saying, I don't care about my kid.
No,
or that I'm not going to take responsibility.
No, but you are not taking responsibility for the things that you've already committed to, which is the man that you're married to. Now, I don't know what their marital life was like. He could have been an abusive, I don't know, something. But at the same time, there's also an option that you leave. So I'm sorry. I don't mean to. It seems problematic to me when you tell me that someone has been having an affair. I think that says something about their character and that their ability to make choices may not be great.
I think that one of the issues to me is that if you have the time and effort to be having extramarital affairs somebody outside your marriage, maybe you should have taken that time to really pay attention to your kid. Because every single time that there's these kinds of shootings, what we find out is there's red flag after red flag after red flag.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody drops the ball.
Yeah.
And again, this is why this is such a big case.
Yeah.
Because they're saying to everybody,
mm,
that if you drop the ball, you're going to go to jail for 15 years.
Well, you should.
And that's where they haven't been convicted yet. I mean, she's now...
haven't been sentenced.
They haven't been sentenced yet. Mm-hmm. But it's likely that they'll get 15 years in jail. The son is in jail for life without the possibility of parole.
Please.
And just so you know, this isn't like Thousand Oaks or Sherman Oaks around here, right?
Are they from?
They're from Michigan.
Right, okay.
They are from a rural area where gun-toting is normal.
Sure.
And also, it should be noted that the jury on this was not like people against guns.
No.
These were all people who were gun owners,
mm-hmm,
who were Second Amendment fans, mm-hmm, who would by all means give their kid a gun. It was very normal. It is very normal, mm-hmm, in this area for kids to have guns. Yeah. They even talked about how in this area people are showing off their guns in their prom pictures.
Of course.
But not a 9mm SIG.
Well,
we're not talking about using that to go and shoot a deer.
That's the thing. It's like, what are you using the handgun for? And what's your mental state?
Do you think, the math doesn't add up to me with what the parents were trying to accomplish with this boy. They had to have known he was troubled.
Yeah.
You look at a picture of him and you know, if I saw this boy walking down the street, I'd say, oh, that poor guy.
Oh.
He looks like a sad case.
Okay.
Right? You can tell he's sad.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like he was somebody who was crying for help.
Did he say in his journal entries or whatever, I assume he left a manifesto of sorts, did he say, I hate these kids?
I don't believe so. I believe he is just focused on violence. I think he's angry. So just this last Thursday, which was last week, and we're talking about this in March,
mm-hmm,
this happened March 15th, in the groundbreaking verdict, the Michigan jury, and it's no surprise because the mother was already convicted, but they found James Crumbly guilty of involuntary manslaughter. And a result experts say could now set an important precedent for the extent to which parents of school shooters could be found responsible.
I have to say, we've all seen these types of cases where it's like, this is the first ever kind of thing. Whoever does the sentencing, the judge, and sometimes sentencing are set up a little bit differently. Sometimes it's up to the judge. Sometimes it's up to a panel as far as, you know, how much time are these people going to get. They are going to set a precedence and make an example of these people. I guarantee it. So whatever the maximum they can get is, I would bet money that's what they're going to get.
So they gave him a gun as a present.
The parents did.
Yes. So let me just ask you this. Mm-hmm. Is there anywhere in that, I'm not a male, but is there anywhere in a man's brain that maybe the father is like, I'm going to give him this as a way of him feeling more manly, or I'm going to give him some confidence in himself. He's going to have an adult something that he can call his own, and he's going to be able to go to target practicing, and he's going to feel like he's got control of something.
I think that would probably motivate you. That's got to be what's going through your mind. Otherwise, why are you giving him a gun?
I out of all the things you can do for your kid, yeah, who's troubled.
Yeah. They weren't facing the fact that he was as troubled as he was.
When they went to the counselor's office and they were worried about the violent pictures and what he was writing on his desk, mm-hmm, and on his picture, on his paper, the parents did not tell them that there was a gun in the home, mm, or that he had access to a gun.
Mm-hmm.
They also, as a parent, didn't check the backpack.
That's the other thing. The school should have checked the backpack.
Well, to me, the school should have checked the backpack. But as you're now, you've been called down there.
Yeah.
Give me your freaking backpack.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have a conversation. These were not, we're dealing with this from our point of view. These parents were not on that level.
At what point did these parents do anything right?
I don't know. That's a good question. At what point did they do anything right?
I mean, it's like every single thing that you could possibly do wrong, yeah, these parents did wrong.
It seems as though they did.
So this is what was said. We're living in a new world now, and the new world is prosecutors are saying, if we're not going to have legislation, if we're not going to have significant protections, we're going to take it upon ourselves to use the law in a way that gets accountability to everyone and anyone who could have potentially been involved.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I agree.
I totally agree. What do you feel like about reading your kids' journals?
If you're under my house, if you're under my roof, sorry, it's all mine.
Really?
Yeah, really, especially if I'm concerned. If I'm not concerned, there's no concern. You're just writing down your thoughts and feelings about, you know, this girl or that boy or whatever. That I don't care about. But if I have reason to be concerned, and it sounds like they did, they knew that he was troubled, they just didn't take the time. Yeah, I 100, it's all mine. It's all my property. If you don't want me to know your inner thoughts, don't write in a journal. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it all comes down to if you think that there's a reason that you need to look.
That's
obviously
that's
if
it.
You think that there's a reason you need to look.
Right.
There is no privacy.
None.
My house is my house. There's no privacy.
Exactly.
But these parents were not even tipped off by any sort of thing.
Did they know he had a journal? Do we know that?
I believe that they knew that he had a journal, but they never looked in it, from what I understand.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, the father, they have cell phone. They have cell phone records from the father who worked as like an Uber Eats driver or something during the day. Mm-hmm. That's what he had to go back and do.
Mm-hmm. Like, got it.
Couldn't take your kid with you.
Okay.
He had to go do that. He passed his house several times during that day.
Mm.
So much so that they made it a point that he could have gone back to the house to make sure that the gun was there. The gun was secured. Maybe he could be. These parents are so oblivious to yeah, what should and could happen.
Yeah.
That there was no ability
there
for them
no
to
oversight.
Do it.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that when the mother was convicted, she believed that there was no way that this could have been prevented.
What?
She literally said to herself that she did not feel like there was any way she could have prevented this.
No matter what she did. That's the worst thing I've ever heard. I don't know why that's so upsetting.
Of all the cases that I've heard lately, this at least gave me some feeling of closure, mm-hmm, a little bit, because mm-hmm, it went to all levels.
Mm-hmm.
The kid who, I mean, he's responsible. He has to pay the price. But was it really his fault?
Right. It's a very sad tale because it doesn't sound like he had a chance. He didn't stand a chance. Also, at some point, you have to take responsibility for yourself. But when you got parents who are arming you with a handgun, it makes it difficult to be like, well, the kid should have chosen no violence. He didn't have the tools, I don't think, to do that. However, this is such an interesting precedence to set, and I think it's about time. Do you agree that the parents should be prosecuted?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that parents should be held responsible for a lot of what their kids do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the most part, parents are looking to get their kids out of any kind of responsibility or any type of accountability when it comes to things that are going to either affect their future or something that's going on. Like, for example, at the high school in our area many, many years ago, there was a cheating scandal, right?
Oh.
And as soon as the parents got wind of it, they got a lawyer.
Of course.
And of course, they didn't want that to go on to the kid's record and all of these things. If I thought my kid gets convicted, if my kid gets caught cheating, he's going to pay the consequences.
I don't know. The public school system is overwhelmed. Anyway, no, there's no defending it. And I like this precedence that's being set. Go Michigan.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. We're going to take a small turn. We're going to bring it back here to Orange County because there's been something happening that I love.
Ooh.
Now, actually, now that we've been talking about it for a minute, I did realize that my husband and I actually did something really fun on Friday night. I know. It was like, I don't remember what I did. It's all in oblivion. No, we had to drive up to LA to buy some fabric for an outdoor project that we're doing. We have an upcoming wedding.
Oh, yes.
And we're having a little backyard get together for the night before the wedding for the rehearsal dinner. So we've got a few home improvements that we're doing. So we went up to LA to purchase some fabric, and then we found ourselves in LA at 3:00 in the afternoon.
Ooh.
Where don't you want to be at 3:00 in the afternoon?
LA.
On a freeway, trying to get back from LA to Orange County. So we put it in our little like maps, and it was going to take us 2.5 hours to go 40 miles. And we were like, let's not do that. So we drove around LA. We picked up something to eat. It was absolutely delicious. And then we were like, let's go see a movie. Let's go do something fun. We couldn't find anything to do. It was like, well, none of the interesting things that we wanted to do were available. Just nothing was working out. So instead, because my husband's married to me, he is very kindly putting up with my weird personality, I decided that we should go on a little O.J. Simpson tour.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. So we drove by Nicole Brown Simpson's former home.
Did they tear that down?
They didn't tear it down, but they redid it. So that you can't recognize it, and they changed the address. But you know me. You get me on Google, I'm going to find it, which I did. So we found it. We drove by.
I would not want to live there anyway.
Can you imagine?
No, I would not.
They didn't tear it down. They redid the front, which is where she and Ron Goldman ended up.
Would not do it.
They redid that part. Mm-mm. Even at that, though, it's like, oh, no.
The ghosts are still there. They're milling around.
Bad things happened there.
That's not good.
And you can't see the house at all. They have these huge shrubs, this beautiful gate. It's absolutely gorgeous. But you know TMZ and their double-decker bus is driving by there daily.
Have you ever done the double-decker bus from TMZ?
I haven't.
I would like to do it.
I think it would be fun, and I would feel bad about myself at the end because I think it's real scuzzy.
I do too. But I also
I'd still do it.
And it's kind of like reading People magazine.
Oh, no. People Magazine.
Well,
People Magazine is award-winning journalism.
Sure. Okay, so let's go to, like, I don't know, The Mirror. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying.
Like, it's just like tabloid, right?
Oh, it's the lowest life form of reporting.
Right.
I would still do it.
I would, too.
We should do it. Let's podcast from it. Yes, let's do it.
We should do it.
So we drove past Nicole's place, and then we drove over to OJ's place. Now, that place on Rockingham, they raised that sucker to the ground.
They did.
Gone. Built a new house on it. It's the best lot.
But nothing took place there. It was just where he lived.
The bloody glove was dropped there.
Okay. But nobody died there.
Cato Kalin lived in the back. He heard the thumping. There's a lot. I mean, bad deeds happened in that house
for
no
sure.
matter what.
For sure.
Just OJ himself living there. So they raised that place to the ground. It's, like I said, it's the most beautiful lot on the block because it's kind of a corner, kind of peninsula. You cannot see anything. Again, whoever did the shrubbery really did it up because you can't see a single thing. So I was happy to see that. The neighborhood it was in, though, I just kept saying to my husband, These neighbors must have been furious when this whole thing went down. They must have lost their minds. And even now, I said, you know, the TMZ double-decker is driving by that house a couple times a week easily.
Totally.
So we did that. And then I remembered that I had read this article in the LA Times or somewhere that Marilyn Monroe's bungalow was going to be torn down. And, you know, where she died in LA. She lived in a bungalow, this little bungalow. That's where she was found dead, and the owners were going to tear it down. And I don't know who intervened, if it was city council, I don't know who. Someone intervened and prevented the owners from tearing it down.
Really?
They immediately slapped it with a historical places
thing. Nice.
So now it can never be torn down, and it still stands. So I was like, can we go? We're not far. All these places are right within sort of like distance of one another. They're very close to each other. So we drove over there, and it's such a cute little street in this gorgeous little neighborhood. And it's at the end of this very tiny cul-de-sac with three bungalows at the end. And, you know, it just looks like nothing bad could ever happen there. Oh no. Like I said, bad deeds. They got down to some bad deeds in that house back there.
Don't you ever wonder, like, I kind of get freaked out about even going to hotel rooms.
Oof.
Because you just don't know. I know mm-hmm. that they're supposed to disclose if somebody died there, I think.
A hotel room?
No.
But in a home.
In a home. Like, if you're purchasing it, you mm-hmm. have to disclose what's going on. The average home could have some bad stuff happen that you wouldn't know about it, like 30 years before.
They don't have to disclose something that happened 30 years before?
No. It's just if it happened to them.
Or 3 years, or there's a statute, and then they don't have to say a thing unless you specifically ask, which is what you do. When you go look at a house, you're like, I need to know, has anyone ever died here of anything other than natural causes?
I know.
You know, it's like,
out.
So having said that, we did do something really fun Friday. Sorry, honey, I forgot about the great tour that you took me on, that I forced you to take me on. Sorry, he puts up with so much. Anyway, so back down here in Orange County, there's a new campaign of billboards, and I don't know if you've seen these. The advertising campaign aims to send a clear message to shoplifters and other criminals throughout Southern California. The actual billboard says, crime doesn't pay in Orange County. It's a black billboard. We'll put it on our Instagram. White and red writing, and it's aggressive, and there's a lot of them. I've seen three.
I have two.
Just driving, doing two. My errands. Now, some people might find that to be like, wow, what is wrong with you? Why are you being so aggressive? When you go to LA, as we did on Friday, the amount of homeless behaving badly is really quite profound. And it's very, very sad, because the city of LA they built this beautiful city to handle the amount of people who live there and around there. And it's this great thing that has so much potential to give life and jobs and whatever. I know I'm waxing poetic about the city of Los Angeles, but it's really a great place. Now you've got homeless junkies standing in the street naked. We were driving to the Fabric District.
So sad.
And there was a guy, might have been a woman, sitting on the side, just on the curb, shooting up. I know it sounds like you didn't really see that. You know what that looks like driving up there.
I know.
And it is a reality. And I'm like, this is unacceptable. It's unacceptable. So the county of Los Angeles, we have a DA. His name is Todd Spitzer.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's spent any time in Orange County knows that name. He has been in politics his entire adult life. He is known for not making friends. One of those type of people, he's one of those politicians who is less concerned about the party line and is more concerned about what he deems right and wrong.
Right.
He's usually correct. Sometimes the way he approaches it is offensive to people. I don't care. His kid went to school with my kid for a short amount of time, and he found out that there was a convicted pedophile that lived
really
within a certain amount of feet from the school, and it was on like Donkey Kong. He was an elected official. He wasn't DA at the time, but he might have been sitting on the county board of supervisors at the time. He stood out in front of the guy's house every morning.
No way.
While the kids were coming to school, He would stand out in front of the guy's house, arms crossed, just to make sure he wasn't coming out. I think he had to stop doing that because I think it was seen as like harassment or whatever.
Really?
But he's one of those people that's like, what? I'm just standing on a public street. I can do whatever I want. It was that kind of back and forth. But then the guy had to move because he was too close to an elementary school. He shouldn't have been there in the first place.
That's the whole rule.
That's the whole thing. So according to Orange County District Attorney Todd Spitzer, he said, quote, I want these thieves to understand that this is not Los Angeles County. He went there.
Oh, he did.
He just said it. We're not LA. People call us beige and boring. Good. I'll be beige and boring all day long. I don't care. There's a reason people live in Orange County and not in LA. And, you know, there's good reasons to do both. But anyway, Todd went on to say, we still prosecute in Orange County. And just because LA is very lenient on people who steal, if you come to Orange County, we're going to prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law, unquote. With the rise of theft, especially smash and grab robberies, it's a huge problem. Even here in Orange County, these jewelry stores,
I know,
they have armed guards. They didn't used to be armed. They were just a presence of security. There are armed guards standing outside. You have to have a reason to go in that jewelry store. And if you don't have a reason, or maybe you're just giving off a vibe, you don't get to come in. They don't care. Back to the billboards. California Retailers Association is a big supporter of these billboards,
as you can imagine.
The group's president is a woman named Rachel Michelin. She said, quote, I think making that point that there will be accountability is key to deterring the behavior from happening in the first place. But then making sure people understand that if they continue with this behavior, they're going to be caught and they will be prosecuted. The $250,000 initiative, this is how much these billboards cost. $250,000 covers several counties with billboards posted on freeways along the borders of Orange County, the buses of Norwalk, Long Beach, LA, and Glendale. So they go all the way up into LA and out to Glendale. I mean, they're not just in Orange County. According to Spitzer, the billboards are not funded by taxpayer dollars. You ready for this? They're funded by illegal proceeds seized from criminals.
Oh, that's even better.
Right? So we'll post this other picture. There's a second picture. The criminals, especially in LA, this photo's from near City of Commerce, which is in the heart of Los Angeles. These particular criminals are not impressed. Right off the 5 freeway, vandals got to the... I'm sorry, it's kind of funny. Vandals got to the billboard and they removed crime doesn't pay. It just says crime does pay.
No way.
Oh, yeah, it says that.
Oh, it's so good.
Crime does pay in Orange County. And then there's some other words that I think they must be some, maybe gang graffiti because I don't know what they mean. But it's all like, oh, even at that, you kind of got to laugh.
You have to laugh, but wouldn't it be great? Whenever I see graffiti, I wish we had cameras and I wish we had some kind of electronic device that if the graffiti paint goes up there, it electrocutes them or
Wouldn't
something.
That be great? I know.
If we could invent that, we would make a lot of money.
So that's it for our local hometown Orange County story. I'm actually really, really happy with these billboards. I don't know what good they're going to do, but it's definitely a statement of just like, listen, this is, we know you're there and we know what you're trying to do. So you got one more for me?
Well, you know, it's more of just a, let's just talk about the obvious.
Okay.
One of the things that has been trending now is the impact of the school shutdowns. And the school shutdowns that happened in 2020 and extended to 2021.
Okay.
And, you know, the conversation, and I've had conversations with people who have decided to die on the cross in the Fauci corner, in the corner of the pandemic couldn't have been helped. We had to mask. We had to mandate vaccinations. And we had to close the schools no matter what.
Really? You know people who think
Oh,
that?
Absolutely.
Oh, no.
I know two or three people I've spoken to. And I don't get very far in the I don't really talk to them about it. Because when I hear that's their conversation now. Because at the time, that was a conversation you could have.
Sure, sure, sure.
You could say the things like, we need to shut down the schools because we want to protect everybody.
Right.
The kids could be bringing it home to Meemaw and we don't want her to get sick. So there's been a lot of test results come out and we're finding kids are not just a year behind. They're much farther behind because we assumed that all the kids that were going to be staying home were going to be staying home and they were doing well.
You assumed that going into the pandemic that they were on track, and that was turning out now to be right. False. Yeah.
You start looking at kids who are high achievers, they're going to be okay. The kids who are suffering and continue to suffer are going to be the inner city kids and the kids who needed more help to begin with.
Now, are you talking just academically or are you talking emotionally as well?
I brought in the emotional component of it because I think it says a lot about society right now. You've seen these school shootings like we talked about at the beginning. This kid was a product of shutdown.
That's the thing, is the fallout has yet to be really seen. It's going to take some time. And I mean, I understand what you're saying, that it's like, no, it was bad and we know it. Yeah, to a certain extent, we do know it. But I mean, I have a good friend who has twins who were in high school when we got shut down. It seemed to be okay while it was happening during the shutdown. It was like, no, they're self-motivated. They're both very bright, blah, blah, blah. And they were. When everything opened back up is when it really hit the fan. And those kids could not cope. And it was a delayed reaction to what had happened. When things don't go the way they're supposed to go, especially in those teenage years that are tough enough anyway, they're a nightmare. When they don't go the way they're supposed to go, someone's going to pay the piper. It might be right then. It might be in the midst of it, this child is depressed. Or it might be a few years, a year and a half down the road, where suddenly they're exhibiting signs of, uh-oh.
Yes.
He or she's not doing that well.
I bring this up because what are we going to do if this happens again?
It's not going to happen again.
How do you know?
Because people will rise up.
Do you think?
Absolutely.
People don't seem to be rising up yet about all of these things. No one's demanding to get answers.
Well, here's the thing, and this is from my own experience. The other day, I had a podcast come on that I happened to listen to during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it showed up in my downloads or whatever, and I had ended one podcast, and then this one came on. It took me back immediately to those days of the pandemic and how I felt, and I could not get to my phone quick enough to turn it off.
It was like a Pavlov's dog.
It was absolutely.
You heard the bell, you started salivating, and you were hungry.
I had to shut that thing off. Yeah, I had an immediate reaction.
I agree.
I was freaking out, and I was like, this is weird. This is over the top. This is out of bounds for me, kind of thing. I think people want to forget about it. It's only been 4 years. We had a lot of really terrible traumatic things happen in those first years, the first year and a half, that when it was really COVID times. That first year was very, very rough. A lot of personal things in my life. I know things happen in your life. Everybody has their own experience. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to hear the name Fauci, the criminal name of Fauci. I don't want to hear any of this junk. I think we have to put some distance. And I think if someone even... So having said that, I think we have to put some distance between ourselves and the reality of what happened. Fine. Second subject. If someone says, guess what? There's a new strain of such and such coming over here. That's when people are going to go, too bad. I guess we're all going to get the flu, aren't we? Well, come what may.
I hope that you're right, because what tends to happen with people is they forget.
Mm-mm.
You know, look at 9/11.
No, they do. You're right.
9/11 is something that we should never forget. You and I will never forget it, but our kids don't know anything about it.
They know about it, but they don't seem to understand how we got to where we were.
That's right.
And who caused it, how it was caused, what political decisions led up to that. There were so many things going on, and now we're back at square one.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. What worries me is that we have let our complacency of what happened
mm-hmm.
go by, because it's uncomfortable, mm-hmm. because we don't want to talk about it, because it doesn't seem to pertain to me anymore. That's behind us. Let's move on.
The good news is we know people in our very families, people who are in their 20s who are like, guess what? Not for me. Thank you very much. And are going into their doctors and demanding, which I get chills just even thinking about. These young mothers going into the pediatrician and demanding to have this vaccination and that vaccination, and that's all we're doing. Oh, but we always give these five others. No, we're not. Not with this child.
I agree.
Those are the people who are going to save us from having to go through this again, because they just absolutely will. They question everything, and I'm glad.
I hope so.
Because we can't do this again.
No.
Now I'm mad.
But I brought it up because I started seeing reports, and I couldn't get a handle on what reports were really. There's nothing out there yet. There's just speculation on how bad or how bad it is, or how maybe it isn't that bad. Mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, I think that even if academically we're looking at it on a certain level, mm-hmm. like the reading level, math level, science level, it's bad. But when you look at it on the emotional level, yeah. that's what really worries me.
It should be a concern. I think that that's where most people suffered. I know I did. I wasn't in school. And like my podcast experience where I just had this visceral reaction, I like couldn't get to my phone fast enough. I'm like, that's dumb, but people are experiencing that on the daily with stuff that's just as minor as what I just experienced.
On top of the fact that we still are working from home and we're not interacting with other mm-hmm. human beings on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And it's become, oh, I only will work from home. That I like the flexibility. People need people.
Yeah,
we
do.
We need to have each other. Even mm-hmm. annoying people is important, right? Like having the office lady at the school that drives your kid crazy, mm-hmm. it teaches your kid how to interact with crazy office lady.
It's funny you say that because there have been recently, and I don't know if this is a trend, I don't know what's happening, but there's been clickbait headlines that are like, such and such virus has been identified coming out of so-and-so. Could this be the next shutdown? I know it's clickbait. I go right on by it, but I'm like, how dare you even suggest it?
I know.
There's not going to be another shutdown.
I know.
I refuse. You are going to be responsible for bailing me out of jail because I will
be right there with you. I will be there. I am not going to put up with any of it.
No.
We will not do that. I am too old to be dealing with this anymore.
I will not be pulled over by the National Guard again.
On the beach.
Asking me to explain where I'm going, why I'm going there, and what my address is. It's never going to happen again. Won't let it. Anyway,
can't let it. Oh, aren't we feeling good now?
We feel so good. I'm going to close it up with my last story. We're going to go to Mother Russia.
Oh.
Yeah.
that's a light subject. Good. I'm glad we're ending on a light note.
Do you love it? Russian President Vladimir Putin won a landslide re-election victory earlier this month, the month of March, taking, get this, 87% of the vote.
Oh, really?
After a three-day election derided by government critics and the West as neither free nor fair.
Do you know how the elections work there?
Well, people go in and they, you know, they cast their ballot. It's not even called election day. It's called voting day, mm-hmm. which seems like, well, it's the same thing, but it means a lot. Election gives you the perception that you are electing.
Well, that you have a choice.
You have a choice. Your behavior is, by an election, your behavior is predicting an outcome. Voting day means you're going to go check a box, and it doesn't matter which box you check.
Is there only one box to check?
No, there were several people who were running.
Were they real people?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were real people. I have all four of them here.
Let me ask you this. Sure. I might sound naive, and maybe it's just the... to run against him?
He did. I think they were taking their lives into their own hands.
Or were they set up and he knew they were doing that?
It might be part of it,
too. Just to give the illusion of an election.
Might be part of it, too. You know, no matter what we think we know about Russia, we still don't know what's going on over there.
I really don't. It's a very bunch of mystery. Because I know there's
mystery.
People there that don't agree with what's going on. Mm-hmm. But they can't speak out against it.
No. A lot of people find themselves falling out of windows. It's a crazy...
It's a phenomenon
it's
over
a
there.
Phenomenon over there, yeah. Going into the vote, the Kremlin was believed to seek not merely victory, but a historic turnout, one that showed the country more united than ever behind their leader more than 2 years into a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Russia's Central Elections Commission later issued data showing that 77% of the country's eligible 114 million voters had cast ballots. Okay? 77% turnout. I don't think we've ever had a turnout like that here in the United States, have we? The turnout alone is suspect.
I mean, again, is that actually what happened or is that what they're telling us?
What they're telling us. I mean, that's what came out of the, what's it called? The Russia's Central Elections Commission. All right. That's what they're telling us.
They're on the up and up.
I'm just giving you the facts as I know them. This is coming from NPR, which you couldn't get more reliable. You asked about who ran against Putin. All of his opponents in the race were members of the what they call the rubber stamp parliament. So anyone who ran against him was in parliament, barely ran, these other three people barely ran a campaign or held any rallies at all. Not one of them received more than 5% of the vote. So, meanwhile, anti-war candidates were banned from the ballot over registration errors. So you did have some folks who were trying to get on the ballot who were like, no, no more war in Ukraine. This is the platform I'm running on.
But they had a little, they didn't dot their I.
They didn't dot their I across their T, whatever. So it undid the will of thousands of Russians who backed the candidacies, when they tried to do that. So the Kremlin couldn't afford to have these candidates in the race. This is according to a former Kremlin speechwriter turned government critic who now lives in exile. Sorry, buddy. The election would have turned into a referendum on the issue of war and peace, he added, noting that there was a referendum, and if there was, Putin would lose. So that's telling us that this person thinks the temperature in Russia would have gone, that the votes would have gone against Putin because most people are against the war in Ukraine who live in Russia. I don't know. This is just, again, this is NPR. There was also widespread concerns about vote rigging, particularly given the election's unusual three-day schedule. 3 days they had to vote.
Well, we used to vote in one day.
Now we don't anymore. Also in Russia, there's been expanded electronic voting and the fact that Russia's military was charged with securing the vote in occupied territories of Ukraine. So Ukraine got to vote in this election and apparently they love Putin.
Who wouldn't?
According to a human rights monitoring group, at least 89 Russians were detained for a series of election-related protests. Some of them quickly went viral online. In several cities, voters dumped dark liquid dye into the ballot boxes. In others, they set fire to the voting booths. I mean, this is what happens when people don't feel as though they're being represented. So some critics have weighed in and said, you know, Russia should just go back to a czar system.
Oh.
Just have a monarch. I just call it what it is.
Because that's what's going on.
Because that's basically what's going on. But anyway, so that's news from Russia. And, wishing nothing but the best for the people of Russia and, hoping.
And the Ukraine.
And Ukraine. Hoping that it all.
Since they love Russians so much.
Apparently, they're really supportive. That's a part when I started reading this, I was like, what? You got to be kidding me.
That is just bold, right?
It's very bold.
It's really bold. Yeah. I mean, it's not even, it's like next level.
It's real gutsy.
Propaganda.
It's real gutsy.
I mean, it's just like, okay, just throw everything at it and sure. See what happens.
See what sticks. See what the folks believe. So that does it for this edition of Two Average Girls. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ann Police.
And I'm Denise Cooper.
Rate, review, subscribe. Wherever you listen to podcasts, go ahead and give us a like and give us a little review. We would love it. And also on Instagram, as well as Facebook, we are Two Average Girls Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Episodes of Two Average Girls are free wherever you get your podcasts.
Be sure to hit the follow or subscribe button on the Two Average Girls main page so you never have to go searching for new episodes.
Our editor is Aiden Bloomstein.
Our social media producer is Samantha Stone.
And original music for Two Average Girls is by Jason Fries.